My name is Patricia Kathleen, and this podcast series will contain interviews I conduct with female and female-identified entrepreneurs, founders, co-founders, business owners, and industry gurus. These podcasts speak with women and women-identified individuals across all industries in order to shed light for those just getting into the entrepreneurial game, as well as those deeply embedded within it. Histories, current companies, and lessons learned are explored in the conversations I have with these insightful and talented powerhouses. The series is designed to investigate a female and female-identified perspective in what has largely been a male-dominated industry in the USA to date. I look forward to contributing to the national dialogue about the long overdue change of women in American business arenas, and in particular, entrepreneurial roles. You can contact me via my media company website, wild.agency, that's wilde.agency, or my personal website, patriciakathleen.com. Thanks for listening. Now let's start the conversation. Hi guys, welcome back. This is Patricia Kathleen, and I am over the moon today to be sitting down with Crystal Guerra. So welcome, Crystal.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Equally excited to be joining you guys today.
Yay. Okay, a quick bio on Crystal, you guys. Crystal Guerra is a marketing executive with over 8 years of experience in event programming, media relations, digital marketing, and demand generation. She is a first-generation college graduate from Utah Valley University, where she completed a Bachelor's of Science in Business Management with a marketing emphasis. Crystal is a Senior Demand Generation Manager for Instructure. And Crystal thrives on marketing solutions that drive results and has worked with hundreds of clients ranging from mid-size to large enterprise Fortune 500 companies and has been involved in raising over $8 million in venture capital. Crystal is also the CEO and founder of Guerra, a media agency dedicated to advocating for inclusivity, women in leadership, and preparing young adults for career success. Crystal has been recognized as one of Utah's 30 women to watch by Utah Business Magazine, and in 2017 was nominated for the Utah Women in Tech Awards. She has been featured in several publications, conferences, podcasts, and news channels, including ABC4, Fox 13, and KSL5. Crystal's work to advocate for women in business and mentor youth have fueled her success and notoriety. When Crystal is not serving others, you can most likely catch her at the airport getting ready to board her next adventure as a professional tourist. So that's so exciting. I love your bio, and I'm really excited to get into it with you, Crystal. I think it's amazing. You are absolutely, given the research I've done on you, you are absolutely one of the women to watch in Utah, and I think the nation over. So I'm so excited. Crystal is located in Salt Lake City, Utah, and this podcast is happening virtually as I am sitting right now in sunny San Diego. So let's drop straight into your, so you obtained your bachelor's degree at Utah Valley University, and that was with business management and marketing emphasis. So did you know at that time when you were graduating, what area did you want to go into, or did you kind of just pepper the field and take whatever job first offered?
Sure thing. So I have always been fascinated by business, and I guess I shouldn't say always, but it did start at a young age for me. Initially, one of the things that I really gravitated towards was actually teaching and education. I have always loved learning. I consider myself a lifelong learner. And growing up, teachers really were people that I gravitated towards. And so for a long time, I wanted to be a teacher, but my dad actually went into entrepreneurship pretty early, and he does full-time commercial farming. So at a young age, we were all kind of forced to help out with the family business. And that entailed basically being on the side of the road in the summers and selling all kinds of fruits and vegetables. And so that really early kind of caught my interest in terms. I didn't know what it was called. I didn't know it was marketing. I didn't know it was display marketing. I just knew, you know, that it was child labor at the time. But as I got older, I was like, this is fun. I like the idea of pairing people with what they're looking for. And my dad was also very specific on how our booth looked. And so just kind of early on, I got intrigued by the whole concept of the buyer's journey, business, marketing. And then, you know, as I got older and kind of learned more that that was a career choice, I was like, you know, this is something that I think I could, you know, really enjoy and do well in as well.
Right. Did you, where was the booth? Like, which state?
Sure. So I was actually in Utah. So I grew up in a very small town called Santa Quinn. It's out here. And so it's one of those kind of last towns. We're 5 hours from Vegas here. So it's one of the kind of the smaller towns that you pass on your way to, you know, the 5 hour trip to Vegas there. So very rural. I literally remember when we were getting our first stoplight in like our town, and that was it. That was like a big deal. So far from the big city life and,
yeah,
you know, the corporate and business world that I spend my days in now.
So were you in college, did you know that you were going to hit more the corporate and big city life, or did you think that you were going to go back in and incorporate your knowledge into like more of the small town economics?
Sure. No, that's a great question. I think definitely more the big city. I think part of me was just so anxious to explore the world because I hadn't traveled when I was younger. That was not something financially feasible for us. And so outside of, you know, road trips to visit family, I had no concept of what big city looked like. For us, it was about a 20-30 minute commute to like the closest mall. Mm-hmm. And that was like exciting. And so growing up, you know, looking at different maps or Googling different images, I was like, you know, I'm going to go to DC someday and DC, New York, and just kind of make it into the big city life. Now, having traveled to a lot of those places, I do enjoy a happy balance between living here and having the opportunity to travel to other areas.
Yeah, nice. So when you said you wanted to have an influencer towards education and teaching, you knew that that was the case. So you graduate college, and what's the first thing you do?
So it was actually how I started in technology. So my background has been in B2B and software, and I've been in this space for a little over 8 years now. And it actually started as an internship. So I was kind of fortunate to be picked up as an intern with a tech company. I was actually brought on to help coordinate one of their largest user conference and events. And I had a good background in planning and logistics, and having spent time working on student government while in school. And so that was kind of my first introduction there. Technology was definitely not on the radar. I mean, I hadn't grown up with a computer in the house. And so I wouldn't say that I was tech adverse. It's just that wasn't something that I thought was possible. And it was something that, in speaking to a lot of other Latinas, it was not something that I saw like, oh yeah, I know this person that loves working in tech. And so I thought I would go maybe more the ad agency route. I liked the creativity of that space, and then kind of by accident ended up in tech and really fell in love with it.
So what was the accident? How did that happen?
So following my internship, the conference went really well, and they just said, hey, we really like your work, and we'd like to open up a full-time position for you to stay on with us. I was about 2 months, I was a senior in college at that time, so I was about 2 months away from graduating. So I knew that I was getting close to needing to figure out what I was going to do post-college. But, you know, this opportunity came up, and I really enjoyed the team. And then as I started getting to understand what the B2B space entails, what technology, what SaaS even is, so software as a service, I was like, wow, this is something that I definitely didn't know was possible, but I'm excited to see what I can do here and just really try and absorb and learn as much as possible.
So it was kind of their requirement that pushed you into that on the job, like learning moment in the environment. Mm-hmm. Did you find that you were immediately enthralled, or was there a bit of a reluctance?
I was a bit reluctant only because I felt, you know, being first generation college graduate, first there's a transition there, kind of navigating some cultural differences. Both of my parents were immigrants from Mexico, and so I was really the first one to kind of step into a professional, you know, kind of field in that sense and really work in the corporate space. And so it was a little bit daunting just because I would look around and, you know, Utah isn't known for its diversity. And so kind of looking around at some of my peers, I already felt like I was a little bit behind, and it was a little bit uncomfortable not seeing anyone who looked like you or who had a similar background to kind of, you know, how I was raised and where I was coming from. So, yeah. And then there's that other layer of being a woman in tech, which, you know, the numbers are getting better, but we're still not quite there in terms of, you know, equal representation. And so just kind of a lot of those, there's a lot of complexity involved there. So I would say I was excited, but there was a little bit of an uneasiness for sure.
Yeah, it's a double layer, you know, being a Latina and then getting into also being a woman, as you said. Did you find, really quickly, just to kind of tangent off with that, are there any tools or social mechanisms or other, maybe, I don't know, even software that kind of help you or helped you at the time navigate some of that very like lone ship, you know, all alone out on that sea of, you know, who you were? Did you find things that you did that you thought that was a great technique I developed in order to kind of bridge that gap?
Sure. Not so much from a tech stack standpoint. I know that there's some more, you know, tools and applications that have since come out now. I think diversity and inclusion training is now something that's become more mandatory in organizations, which I'm so excited about. And so just, you know, yeah. How do we have that conversation? I think for me, it was just being okay with being uncomfortable and just saying, if it's going to be, it's up to me. And so I kind of felt that, you know, this was the card that I was dealt, and I could either take those and, you know, feel bad for myself or have a pity party or whatever the case was, or just say, you know, what do I need to do to move forward? How can I best learn? So I spent a lot of time, I think, just observing and trying to take in the culture and my surroundings and understanding the dynamics of what that was like.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that a lot. I mean, just, you know, standing up and learning how to be brave. I always tell people, yeah, it's, you know, somebody here is going to have to be brave. I have this story that I'm always telling people post interview off the record about how I used to say that, you know, in marketing standoffs with companies that weren't so sure they wanted to move forward. It's kind of the VC standoff where people don't, they don't want to be the first one, you know, placing money down. And I always, when I hit that, I'd say, well, someone's going to have to be brave, you know, for anything to move forward. We're both going to have to like be brave here. Our country was launched on people being brave, you know, and taking a chance.
I love that. And one of the women that I follow, she's actually the founder of Girls Who Code. And she's got a book that's out that's called Brave, Not Perfect. And she just talks about the importance of taking chances. And it's okay if it's not, the outcome is not what you expected, but the first step is having the courage to kind of, you know, move forward there.
Absolutely. So moving on, that was the kind of your launch into SaaS and all of that SaaS and everything that you were doing for the internship, following the internship. And then where did you head to next?
Sure. So I was fortunate enough to stay with that company for almost 5 years. They were in the product and portfolio management space. Yeah. So PPM, I had most of our clients were very, very IT heavy, development focused, also very male dominated. And so it was far from kind of what I expected I would end up being as a marketer. You know, like I said, I was thinking more creative agencies, maybe working on TV campaigns, billboards, stuff like that. And so I guess I didn't realize how many different branches of marketing there was. And so it was very helpful for me to kind of jump into this department and understand how many different teams actually compromise marketing and how many, you know, different potential avenues there are for career growth. So I spent a lot of time working on primarily corporate events. That was kind of where I really got started. And from then kind of matured into more of an analytical marketer, very data driven. And that's kind of what's led to my pivot of really being demand generation focused and being able to now get to a point where I understand how to drive leveraging marketing, how to drive business into the company. So,
Right.
Spent time with them for about 5 years. And like I said, it was exciting to get to learn all the different aspects of marketing, what it takes to run a company. And then for me to just get better in collaborations, understanding, you know, leadership positions, which is not something that I ever necessarily saw myself in. I think for me, it was when I heard dream big, it was like, I thought everyone else could dream big over here, but like I was limited to dream big within this bubble. And that was just, it's hard to become what you don't see often. Right. And so
yeah.
My conversations at home, it's like nobody could even grasp what I was talking about or aspiring to. So it was different for sure.
Daunting. Absolutely. Well, during that time and environment, did you hit things that came very intuitively? And conversely, did you find things that were just a fish out of water that you just thought, I'm never going to master this?
Sure. I think a lot of the nomenclature of understanding SaaS technology, finances, there were just budgets. I remember even one instance where I had like a $250 credit card, right? And I suddenly go to these events and conferences, and it's very common to, you know, put things on your own card and then just get them reimbursed. And I remember I went to one of my, first events, and they were like, oh yeah, you know, this client dinner, we picked it up. It was like $2,000. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, just put it on your card. And I was like, what? Like there were concepts like that I was super, super green at and unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
And, you know, having not come up in a very, you know, financial environment, I didn't understand, you know, how much spend goes into some of these things. And so, conferences too. I mean, understanding how to read a lot of the event orders and working with hospitality and services and vendor negotiation. So that was all foreign to me, but I would say articulation and communication and collaboration, that wasn't. I think a lot of that came from working early on and really selling fruit on the side of the road.
Yeah,
and
definitely
having new people approach me and say, you know, and I was like, hey, do you want a sample? Want to try our watermelon? You know, what are you looking for? And so communication came easily to me, but understanding that in the world of business, there was a lot of newness in the vocabulary for sure.
Absolutely. Once you get those lexicons down, they're just as, you know, just as rote as the rest, I feel. For me, it's more daunting, you know, definitely selling and advertising the fruit on the side of the road. That kind of like very, very blank baptism of sales is just like anybody could be walking. You know, the playground customer is huge.
And it's very tangible, I think, too, that I was very used to a tangible exchange of goods. Mm-hmm. And so now we're talking about, you know, a software application. We have these long buying cycles and, you know, there's way more nuances to the selling process than, you know, thanks for the peaches. And, you know, here's $10 and then you go on your way. So it's very
absolutely
different.
And I forgot to tell everyone at the beginning, shame on me, 30 plus interviews in, and I've just forgotten my roadmap, but we covered her, Crystal's background, and we got a little bit into academia, and the jobs thereafter. Now we're going to hit with her current companies and titles, and then we'll switch over into what she sees for the next 3 years for herself and her current companies, and then we'll get into some advice. So,
sure.
My bad.
No way.
It's early.
Great.
Okay, so let's get into where you're at now, your title, let's repeat that, and then just kind of your current endeavors.
Sure. So I'm currently a senior demand gen manager with Instructure, and they are a global company most known for their learning management platform. So kind of bringing it back to education, one of our products, Canvas, right, is very well known in the higher ed space. So if you've recently been in school, you might have had, had a chance to use Canvas. When I was in school, we used Blackboard at my college, and I know we've since switched to now using Canvas as well. We also focus on the K-12 space, and then we have a new application that focuses on employee development. And so it's been great to kind of go back to that education space. We have amazing clients. I'm fairly new to the organization, so I'm actually on week 9 here. So still, you know, learning a lot about the industry and, you know, what's been working well here for us. But prior to that, I was the VP of marketing at Marketware, which was a healthcare software technology company based here in Utah. And so it was fun to be on the leadership side there and, you know, get to see and understand all aspects of the business. And then now kind of moving on to the next stage, working with this company that's much larger in size. We're, you know, about 1,400 employees and got several global offices. So it's been definitely a change of pace.
Well, and at Marketware, you underwent a couple of transformations there, right? You were with them when they rebooted, they kind of rebranded and they got through a couple of versions of website and things of that nature.
Yeah. So when I started, they were a small startup. And I think, you know, similarly with the first company that I was with, I found that I really thrived in that startup environment. I think it's because I'm very, you know, kind of, I don't know, I just thrive in that building stage, that kind of, you know, that scrappy environment.
Yeah.
And I've always, that's a space that I'm very comfortable in. And it was fun with my first company, you know, getting to see them transition to the point where they were very sustainable and doing well. I had an opportunity to either choose to go to a larger company or go back to the startup space. And I was like, okay, you know, here we go again. And it was laying those building blocks. And so definitely had an opportunity to be involved with, you know, raising rounds of funding, you know, impacting the website directly, and really having an opportunity to work closely with sales to make sure that we were building something in a way that was going to be scalable and lead to more revenue for the organization.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I feel like regardless of how big you go before, a startup is like, for me, learning how to crawl. I feel like understanding the nuts and bolts of the impetus of any company, it gives you this backbone and this structure, like I said, regardless of how huge and corporate you go in the end of, you know, kind of keeping goals in mind and just like the original structure, like the original bones of a house, if you're going to go remodel it, you know, the concept of what you don't want to change or what you might feel like changing. I think that it's an imperative knowledge base. So yep.
I think as a marketer, one thing that I always tell myself is like, if I can make it through this is like the worst, like this is the worst it's ever going to be. Right. I mean, there's some instances where we're like, you know, heavily involved in the finances and you're looking and you're projecting how many payrolls out. And it's like, that you appreciate that so much more. And now being an entrepreneur, there's a lot of that's been very helpful that I've been able to apply to my own business. And so I feel like as a marketer, you really have an opportunity, really any field, but you have an opportunity to grow at such a quick pace that is unlike any other part of your career would be.
Absolutely. Do you think, I mean, so you've been there a short period of time, but do you think that you've taken things from your experience with Marketware and being a VP there to Instructure? Or are you still like finding the bleed over? Or you have already?
Yeah, definitely. I think process for sure is one of the things that's super important. And what's funny, what I've come to learn is that regardless of the size of the business, everyone's problems are the same. It's just that the problem is going to be to a different scale, right? Like every business wants to grow, wants to get more revenue. And every business is trying to get their hands around their data, get more accurate data. And so it's been interesting to feel like I've had a lot of the same conversations that I'm having here throughout my entire career. It's just that, you know, maybe the budgets are larger, or maybe the amount of data that we're now working with is a much larger data set. And so I don't think any of that has changed, but I absolutely feel that, you know, a lot of my previous experience with the team that I have, I've already been able to kind of infuse processes and, you know, add a sense of maturity to some of the things that we're working on now, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's switch gears here and go over to Gera, your media.
Gera Media.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. When did you start it? And let's get into some of the goals and what you do with it.
Sure. So it's been about a year and a half now. And that media agency really came from the need that I saw for myself, kind of feeling a little bit blindsided by a lot of the things I encountered in my own career. And there's one of the things that I talk about is the importance of living out loud. And it's, I always think, you know, I always want to be the type of person that I wish I could have had from a mentor standpoint, from a role model standpoint when I was younger. And so particularly with Latinos here and, you know, being able to get to the point where I can say, hey, it's possible to come from this type of background, this type of environment, feeling like you're really starting at ground level and you've got no extra, you know, there was nothing that was handed to me of like, I was figuring this kind of all out from scratch. To be able to go back and share that roadmap with others, I just felt was very important. And so I work a lot with women in business groups, particularly different multicultural backgrounds, mm-hmm. and just kind of sharing my story of navigating cultural differences. So I do a lot of speaking engagements. I work closely with high school and college students as well. There's a group out here, Latinos in Action, that I've partnered with, and they basically create a pipeline of high school students to try and help them nice. You know, be able to move into college and graduate university status. So it's a combination of speaking engagements. I do some marketing consulting. I always get approached, you know, by folks that have questions there, but a lot of it is centered around showing others kind of how to have success in regardless of the level that you start at. So.
It's so crucial too. I truly believe, you know, that there just isn't enough with all the communication in the world. There just isn't enough role modeling and mentoring happening, particularly in minority communities and female mm-hmm. minority communities. It's it's really rare. I mean, you know, a lot of research that I've done with women founders and things like that, you're going to be one of the first Latinas that I've, you know, interviewed, and I live in San Diego. So I don't think that there's a lack of them. I think that there's some type of a lack of webbing and communication, yeah. which I find happens with women in co-founder, entrepreneurial roles as well. You know, there's this lack of networking, which is crazy mm-hmm. because I truly believe that as a gender, we network quite well. It's just absolutely. That we, taking that into business and really doing the mentoring thing, I think it plays into a lot of paradigms that we're not quite, you know, adept or used to, or we're getting better at rather. But I think it's paramount to start with the education like you're doing and the teaching and really getting the word out there. Like you said, you know, people, for young women and women identified individuals who look like you coming up, yep. you know, just giving them a model of what you never had sitting with your parents, you know, I think that is paramount.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the challenges I think with women is oftentimes we're so amazing at, and we do all these things, and it's oftentimes we don't want to be in the spotlight. And it's like, we get so on task and focused with what we're doing. And I think for me, it wasn't coming from a like, oh, I want to be in the spotlight. It was just, I feel like the story needs to be shared and heard so other people can, you know, hopefully find hope in that. And mm-hmm. I kind of just took it upon myself to say, I want to get to a point in my career where I've experienced, you know, a variety of different situations, and it's all very firsthand, not anecdotal, not this mm-hmm. motivational, you know, just kumbaya stuff, but it's like, hey, I've actually been through it. I've been there. I know what those insecurities feel like. And so I felt like I was doing, a disservice by not going back and reaching back and helping, you know, other women, you know, climb the ladder. And I always say, what's the first thing you want to do when you get to a position of leadership and success? It's send the ladder back down. And I feel like that conversation mm-hmm. needs to happen more often.
Yes. And perpetually more often mm-hmm. and ongoing. And yeah, I think that I challenge people who say, I don't want to be in the spotlight. And my first question is, have you ever been there? Because it doesn't feel so bad. You know, it's a little bit terrifying in the moment. You can, you know, use an analogy of giving a speech in front of 200 people. It might be terrifying. It might be grueling and backbreaking to develop the speech and things like that. But when you get off that stage, most people are feeling higher than life. You know, there is a certain amount of wonder and amazement. I think that women have spent very little time in the spotlight. And so to quickly say we, you know, I don't like to be there. I've heard a lot of really powerful, famous women say, I'm not really, I don't like the spotlight. And yeah. I don't think that they mean that. I think that they mean they haven't spent, you know, a lot of time there, or it's a perception of, granted, there are some introverted personalities and I'm not dealing with any of that. But on the whole, I think that there's kind of an exposure to these things, you know, and I've talked to a lot of women that in the beginning of their career said that public speaking was nauseating to them. And at the end was something that they wanted to do most, you know? So it's, I think learning also the benefits, we always just think about, not me, not the spotlight on me, that type of thing. But then reaching out, how would we pay it forward? How is anyone going to help our daughters, you know, and the next generation after that? So
yeah, and I think really that's what fuels me as I look at my nieces. You know, I've got three different nieces and, you know, they're now bilingual and they're getting better at understanding the differences of kind of, you know, our home dynamics and when they go to school, what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's looking at them and saying, you know, what can I do to kind of help make their journey a little bit easier or help them feel like they belong and it's okay. And so I felt like every time I was surprised, every time I shared my stories or shared insights, and I got messages from people that were like, wow, you know, thank you. That's, I was struggling with some similar things, or I didn't think that was an option for someone like me. And so when you start feeling and hearing those stories, that's really for me what drives me and encourages me to say, you know, it's very important that we're having these conversations.
Yeah. Absolutely. So looking at the next 3 years for Guerra Media, as well as where you're at right now in structure, what do you see? Like, do you have something carved out? You know, you're there 9 weeks now. So have they carved out a path for you? Mm-hmm. Have you gone in, you know, trailblazing saying, listen, this is what I'm going to do here. Do you have goals on either one of those platforms?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Guerra Media in particular, it was like I said, it's been a year and a half and it's been amazing to already hear the response, whether it's being, you know, being interviewed on several different news stations here. One of the big things was actually helping co-found the Utah Latino Business Expo last year. And so that event has launched. We're getting ready for our second annual one here in September. And that was created to showcase really bring community, culture, but also business together for our Latino leaders and community and share, hey, you know, it's not just we have great food and dances and culture, but we have a layer of people that are actually business leaders, that are attorneys, lawyers, print shop owners, real estate agents. And so that's been a really great event for me to kind of work on and expand our footprint here in the community. This year, we added workshops from a business standpoint. So we will also want to help people, you know, how to become a business owner, how to, you know, basic principles of marketing. We added a scholarship this year. So we actually have a high school student who wants to be a doctor. And, you know, he's of Mexican descent. And it's exciting to be able to start putting those types of pillars in place that we want to make a difference in the community. We want to show people an opposite narrative of maybe what they've been seeing a lot in the news and media these days. So that event is definitely a big project that we just want to continue to expand and grow each year.
Is it open to everybody?
It is. It's free to the public. And so that's something that we've really been working to continue to make free and available to everybody. You know, thankfully we've got amazing sponsors, but we do bring entertainment, singers. We also do some CPR prep lessons. We partnered with the American Heart Association, and they've got a group that's specific to the Latino community. And so they do CPR, you know, show people how to do CPR there, and it's all in Spanish. And so we've got a lot of different elements there. And that's I would say that's probably one of the events I'm definitely excited to see.
And the name of it is Utah Latino Business Expo. Okay.
Yep, and you can go to their website, utahlatinoexpo.com, and you can see kind of all the details there. I was a keynote speaker at that event yesterday, heavily focused on the value of women and kind of, you know, shared a little bit again of my story and encouragement to all the ladies that were there. Mm-hmm. And this year we're kind of adding a lot more elements and testing stuff out, but we're in year two and it's been great to see the response so far. So,
absolutely. That's wonderful.
We've got that in the works. And then I am working on a book and documentary as well. So that's kind of long-term next steps for me is I've got a book working title there, but it's around somebody like me. And nice. the whole point is to share, you know, that it's possible to start wherever and, you know, how to combat fears and insecurities and, you know, be able to rise up and be in a position where you're excited about what you do. And, you know, there's a lot of personal stories shared in there for sure. And, those are probably the big goals there. With Instructure, cool. It's been an amazing ride so far for sure. We've got a lot of work in progress, changes, you know, things on our marketing side. And so it's been already a change of pace and it's just been exciting. I just got back from Long Beach. We had our big user conferences out there. And so getting to hear teachers and principals, you know, talking about how our technology impacts their ability to teach and in turn create student success and increase student engagement. It was very touching to hear how technology has made a difference in our classrooms.
So, absolutely, and I love it when technology facilitates. I think that, you know, we all incorporate it so much into aspects of our lives, and there's a lot of tech that I wish I could sit back and meditate on because I might eliminate it. I spend too much time servicing it. And yep. I think there's a fine line and we've stopped questioning it as much. But when I look back on at least my very antiquated exposure with Canvas when I was teaching at the University of Utah was as a young assistant professor it was everything for me, you know, because the ability, the software platform, for those of you that aren't aware, is very inclusive. At least I felt in academia when I was there. I'm sure you guys are on version 2.5 billion by now, but the one that I used, indeed, it was being switched over from Blackboard and some of the earlier models for that kind of a thing. But it was kind of a one-stop shopping, which I'm a huge believer in for as a student and as a professor. So it was a great experience. And just that kind of like, I do believe when those platforms work well, they have to pay attention to the customer. And their customers are like threefold. They've got administrative, they've got the instructor, and they've got the student. And so you really have to be aware of the entire humanity of everyone coming to your platform. And I imagine that working with a company that has to consider those all kind of on a daily basis, at least when you're doing development, is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been fun. And like I said, I love the team here and the culture for sure. And then I'm so grateful to be in the education space because it's such a passion and pillar of mine. And so I felt like I got the most of best worlds where I get to work with teachers now and, you know, also continue to do the other things that I'm excited about as well.
Definitely. Well, let's switch over to, I always like to ask if you could find something about the last five years of what you've been doing, or let's say since leaving school with your bachelor's degree, if you could advise someone about something. I always say it can be positive or it can be negative, because I learned just as much from the negative as I do the positive in my life. But what, if you could name three things that you're so glad they happened or that you chose, what would they be?
One would definitely be intentional networking. Networking has opened so many doors for me. And there's some times where it wasn't even like I was going with a particular intent in mind to get something out of it. It was just sometimes I would go to events because they sounded interesting and I was like, let's see what I can learn. And I came upon somebody, you know, who then later introduced me to somebody else. And it was, I think when I network, at least, I try to be very present. I don't look at it as like, ooh, what can I get out of this person? Or how can this person, you know, help get me further ahead? It's more, I'm genuinely looking to create those relationships. And there was a study done through, you know, recently, they shared that the number one factor of success for people is networking and building relationships and friendships. And so there's like I said, whether it was my internship that was kind of a pass along from a college mate that then, you know, helped catapult me into my career to even where I'm at now. This opportunity came from somebody that I had previously worked with that, you know, had thought of me. And so you just never know. Everyone you meet is going to know something you don't. And so being open-minded to that and just seeing where that can take you is huge. Absolutely. I would say the outside of intentional networking, another big thing has kind of been just self-belief for sure. And trying not to take things personal from people who don't know you personally. There were so many times in my career where, you know, people are going to build their opinions about you and maybe pass some early judgment on about you. But for me, it was always, I knew the type of person I was, I knew where my intentions were. And, I spent a lot of time building up and boosting up my self-confidence and self-belief, and making sure that I really did have, was sharpening my skills too. And so I think that's been a huge testament to my career and being able to rise up into the opportunities that I've had, has been self-belief and confidence. And, you know, we all have those bad days and we've had people that have said stuff to us that have, you know, maybe shook us up a little bit, but I think, taking time to reset yourself is huge.
Yeah.
So can't say enough of that. And then, lifelong learning, really. I'm always, I do enjoy reading. I do enjoy, sometimes enjoy checking the news. but I don't know. I like to try and explore new things. I always try and challenge myself to do something different. And that's why I love traveling, because it puts me in, you know, uncomfortable new situations, whether that's culturally or, right. You know, just scenically. And so I think getting really good at, you know, being okay with being uncomfortable and, you know, being the only one or feeling like the minority, that's helped me, succeed in a lot of situations for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like you've really embraced that. I mean, I think that there could be a huge push to kind of move away from it, you know, after being this kind of minority figure and figuring your way into and through and navigating all of these new environments, that you've gotten into this professional space where I'm sure you've carved out a piece of the pie that feels very comfortable in. But instead of kind of staying there, it sounds like you're consistently putting yourself into situations where you're, again, the minority and uncomfortable and learning. And I think that's such an awesome way to approach life, you know, and conflict therein, because running towards, you know, something that sounds challenging or that you're going to be alone in is, I think, both brave and adventurous, right?
It is. Yeah. A huge emphasis on that second part. I'll say I keep lists on my phone of just things I want to try. What's funny is that I think some people see the outcome of my plans or kind of what happened, and they're like, wow, that's incredible, you know. And I was like, I didn't know it was going to turn into something like that. I've applied for committee board positions and stuff that I just thought was cool. Or I remember one day I wrote down on my whiteboard, like, I want to be on TV, and I didn't know what aspect. And, you know, I've had now an opportunity to go several segments. And so sometimes I do stuff just to do it, and it's not like, oh, this is part of milestone 4 on goal 5. And I feel like I feel like people overthink it sometimes, and I'm like, no, I literally just was having fun. I did this thing, and you know, and I learned this from it, and or this transpired from that. And so I definitely encourage people to just, when was the last time you did something for the first time? It's an exciting way to live life for sure.
Yeah, it is 1,000%. What advice do you have for people like just starting out? So if you ran into a young Latina female identified individual, she was like, listen, I just got my marketing and business degree. You know, what should I do? What are the top three things that you would tell her?
I think one of them just comes down to, what are you passionate about? What gets you excited? So marketing, one of the things that is fun about it is that pretty much every industry, every company to some degree does marketing. So, you know, whether it's going to be, you know, do you thrive in the retail space? Like if you love, I know women who love, you know, spending time looking at clothing and shopping, and they just, they love that B2C space. And so they've got a lot of input there. So it's, I would say kind of map out what is it that gets you excited? What stuff gets you frustrated? What are issues you like to talk about? So for me, like I said, education, I think, is exciting. And so this industry was something that piqued my interest because I was like, great, I get to do marketing within an industry that I love. One of my passions or things that I set out is I never wanted to market something I didn't believe in. And so take time to know yourself and know what drives you and then see how you can then layer your work to coincide with that. So the next thing I would say is just try something. Like when you're first getting out of college, you've got, the one thing I stress with students is you've got so much ahead of you to figure out. And so I have met with, especially I think, I don't know, maybe it's because women are just like, no, I want to get it right. Like, what's the path? Tell me like four or five things I need to do to be successful. And here's where I want to be. And I said, you know, unfortunately life doesn't work like that because there's going to be stuff that comes your way. That's going to be unexpected. So just try something and just understand that it's okay to, you know, A/B test, we say in marketing. And so with life, kind of same way, A/B test stuff, understand what you don't like. Oftentimes doing stuff you don't like and doing stuff you don't like, you find out what you do like. So for me in summers, it was like, I never want to work outside because it's hot. So on my bucket list was like work in air conditioning was like a goal of mine.
Nice. I like that. You and me both. Yeah.
Right. I don't do
probably you more than me given your history with it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No. And then my like humidity, my hair does awful in humidity. Right. So it was just like those little things that help kind of guide me in that sense. But I would say, be willing to try stuff, be willing to be patient with yourself and don't feel like you're on anyone else's, any other timeline but your own. And that's something that I've been grateful for is that I don't compare where anyone else is and where I stay in my lane and kind of stay focused on what I can do and making sure that I'm at least, you know, one step closer today than I was yesterday and I go at my own pace. So
yeah. I think you're a dangerous woman. I'm excited to like sit back and watch you for the next 10 years. All right. Well, I think that kind of wraps everything up. I want to say thank you so much for meeting with me today. I think it was an awesome exploration. I feel like I need to circle back around. There's never enough information. And when your book comes out, I'll be the first to buy and read it. The working title that you have, Somebody Like Me, I love it.
Thank you.
It's wonderful. Yeah, absolutely. If anyone wants to contact you, you have you're on LinkedIn, and then you do have. Does Guerra Media have a website?
So I have crystalguerra.com. So you can go to my website there, and then Instagram as well. So at crystalguerra, and you can kind of keep up with my day to day stuff. And you know, I always try and share anything that's been helpful for me, whether that's books or events that I'm attending, recommendations. So just, you know, my dog, you'll see him on there. and then a lot of my travel adventures for sure. So this year alone, I was in Colombia in February and then I went to Morocco in May. And so, always open to trying out new places, but love to hear from you guys. And thank you so much for having me on and, you know, having the opportunity to share, you know, more of my story.
Absolutely. Thank you. And for everyone listening, thank you for listening. And remember to always bet on yourself. Until next time, Sláinte.